The basic history, there's a long history as to the descent of the Ganga into the earthly planet. I haven't got time to cover it all, but I'm just going to cover the highlights. there's one King Sagara of the Ikshvaku dynasty. He had two queens, Keshani and Sumati, but neither had a child. So Sagara performed severe austerities before his so his wives could produce sons. So eventually he had 60,000 sons. Don't think that's an exaggeration, although we can't comprehend how somebody can have 60,000 sons. If Krishna can create this universe, he can do anything. So Sagara performed the Ashwamedha sacrifice to declare his sovereignty over the kingdoms. According to, then he let loose a sacrificial horse and allowed it to wander in the neighboring kingdoms. If his horse was caught, a battle ensued and the outcome decided the winner. So the 60,000 sons of Sagara were following the horse when they saw him enter a cavern where the sage Kapila was meditating. Not seeing the horse enter the cavern, they presumed that Kapila had captured it. They did not kill Kapila as he was a sage, but they started disturbing his meditations. Annoyed at being disturbed, Kapila cursed them and burnt the 60,000 sons of Sagara to ashes. Such was his power. So this is part of the history. So time had passed, and later Bhagirath, the great grandson of Sagara, chanced to come across the bones of his deceased ancestors, and he wanted to perform the Shraddha of his ancestors, but there was no water available for the ceremony. Agastya, having drank all the waters of the ocean, the country was passing through a severe drought. Bhagirath prayed to Brahma, the creator, to end the drought. Brahma asked him to pray to Vishnu, the preserver, to allow the heavenly Ganga, which emanates from the big toe of Lord Vishnu, to come to earth. Vishnu, when prayed to by King Bhagirath, agreed and asked him to request Lord Shiva, the third member of the Hindu, to allow the torrential rain to fall on his head before it came to earth, as the river was very forceful and she allowed to come down unchecked. Her fall would split the earth if it was unchecked. So Lord Shiva agreed to that, to take the gigantic weight of the cascading Ganga on his matted hair, piled on his head, high on his head. This ensured and delayed the progress of the river, which, meandering through the labyrinth of his hair, lost its force and then gently descended to the Himalayas, from whence it flowed to the plains, bestowing its waters on the parched earth. According to the Agni Purana, Padma Purana, the Ganga descended to earth on Ganga Dashera Day, and a bath in the holy day on this day is said to purify one of all sins. To die on the bank of the Ganga is considered most auspicious. If that is not possible, then the immersion of the ashes after cremation in the river Ganga is a must, as it then releases one from the cycles of birth and death. The 7 days of worshipping the Ganga are called by calling out her. The seven ways of worshipping the Ganga are: number one, by calling out her name, O Ganga, having darshan of her. Next one is by touching her waters. The next one is by worshipping and bathing. And then by standing in the waters of the river and by carrying clay out of the river. The form of Ganga is shown as a beautiful young woman standing on a crocodile and holding a water pot in her hands. Her image with the goddess Yamuna, another sacred deity, is then depicted. So in summary, that the first 10 days of the month of Jyeshtha, known as Dashahara, are dedicated to honor the river Ganges or Mother Ganges. The Ganges is believed to flow in the three worlds. In the heavenly planets, Ganga is called Mandakini. On earth, the Ganges is called Ganga. And in the nether region, it is called the Bhagirath. Thus the Ganga is known as Tripitaka, or the three-path river. People believe that, it is believed that by bathing in the Ganga, sins are washed away. The principles centered in the worship of Ganga are Gangotri, the source of the river, Haridra, from where she comes down to the plain, to Allahabad, and where she joins the Jamuna, Varanasi, the holy city, and Sagara Island in her estuary, where she finally flows into the bay of Bengal. Ganga is supposed to be Ganga is the daughter of the Himalayas, and also goddess Meena. So Ganga Devi also appeared as to be the wife of Maharaj Shantanu, from whom came the great grandfather Bhishma. So there are many things that can be said about Mother Ganga. There's not enough time to cover it all, but one thing which is relevant to us here in Mayapur is how Mother Ganga initially came to Sridhar Mayapur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that very nicely in Sri Navadvipam Mahatmya. And in there, he describes that when the Ganges River was first entering the planet Earth and coming down her path towards Mayapur, she was preceded by King Bhagirath, who was blowing the conch shell and celebrating. He was initiating Mother Ganga's initial entering the Mother Earth. So when the Ganges River came to, it's described, to the west of Antadweep, which is in Rudradweep, where the Ganges River is now flowing. When the Ganges River got to that point, the Ganges River stopped. And King Bhagirath was puzzled, and he was wondering why the Ganges River had stopped right here in Sridhar Mayapur. So he performed austerities, and Mother Ganga personally appeared to him and said, "Don't worry. The reason why I've stopped here is that I'm waiting until Gopunima arrives, the month of Falgun." And she wanted to do some special vrata and austerity to please Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So she informed King Bhagirath, don't worry, after Guru Purnima, then I will leave, but not before then. So it so happened that then Mother Ganga disappeared, and after Guru Purnima, then Mother Ganga continued her path down to the bay of West Bengal and to the ocean. So it is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that whoever takes bath in the Ganga on Guru Purnima day, in that particular place, which is right about where we have the Prabhupada Ghat right now, that actually falls into, after studying the maps given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it can be conclusively, or it can be concluded, that that area where the Ganga is now is Rudradweep, which is west of Antadweep, which is where this particular pastime took place. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that whoever takes bath there in the Ganges on Guru Purnima day will be liberated to Goloka Vrindavan along with 1,000 of his ancestors. And even if that person dies outside of Navadvip Dham, still he gets the same liberation. So we all better be there this next coming Guru Purnima. Just take bath there, and even if you go outside of Navadvip, by the guarantee of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not only you or whoever takes bath on that day will be liberated, but 1,000 ancestors. Sometimes devotees say to all, you know, what are you doing for your parents? Sometimes we feel a little bit, we feel some sympathy, material sympathy for our parents and relatives, that we've neglected them, we've abandoned them, but actually we're doing them a big favor. Because if 1,000 of your ancestors all get liberated, then you've really done them. And it says not to go to Goloka Vrindavan. So sometimes we think, oh, it can't be that easy. But we should never think that the statements that are given by acharyas such as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and any statements that are in the shastras are an imagination. In fact, Sanatana Goswami addresses this issue. He says that, one example. He says that if somebody cannot do an Ekadasi Vrata, for example, that another member of the family or the friend or the guru or the disciple can do the vrata and offer the result of the vrata for the benefit of that family member, friend or whoever. And then Sanatana Goswami says that person will get the full result of the vrata that you do for them because of their incapacity to do it. And he says the person offering the vrata gets 100 times the result. And then he says in the next step, I remember the first time I read that, I said, that's an exaggeration. Then the next sentence was, don't think this is an exaggeration. So when it is stated in the Shastra that 1,000 ancestors are going to be liberated to Goloka Vrindavan, we have to believe it. It's such an unattainable, inconceivable, the most beneficial blessing that one could ever hope to achieve. It can be very easily achieved by the mercy of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the mercy of the Holy Dham, by the mercy of the Mother Ganga. So I'm trying to do three things at once today. So now I'm going to go to Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan and just read a little bit about him, and then finally conclude with Mother Ganga Mata Goswamini, which is some very nice pastimes concerning her. So Just bear with me. Huh? Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan was a highly renounced pure devotee who had not even a fraction of desire for name or fame. He compiled many literatures in order to benefit mankind. However, he never mentioned his birthplace or anything about his family background, and therefore the details are not known for sure. Historians have estimated that he was born sometime in the 18th century, probably in Orisha, possibly near Ramuna. At a very early age, he finished his studies of grammar, poetry, rhetoric, and logic, and then went on pilgrimage. During this time, he spent some time with the Tattvavadis, or Madhva Acharya, in South India, and thus became conversant in the teachings of Sri Madhva Acharya. He became a powerful exponent of this philosophy throughout India. During his travels, he again came to Utkaladesh, Orisha, and met with a grand disciple of Sri Rasikananda Dev, Sri Radha Damodar Deva by name, with whom he discussed philosophy. Sri Radha Damodar Dev explained the conclusions of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy as expounded by Sri Guru Sunda and requested him to consider the unlimited mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These talks penetrated his heart and awakened divine love within. Thus, after a few days, he was initiated with the Radha Krishna mantra and began to study the Tatsamdaba of Jiva Goswami. In a very short time, he became expert in Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. With the permission and blessings of his guru, he moved to Sri Vrindavan Dham to further study these teachings under Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was extremely pleased to see the humble and gentle nature and renunciation and profound mastery of the Vedas that was characterized by Baladev Vidyabhushan. He carefully instructed him in Achincha Bhedha Bhed Tattva. Baladev fully accepted the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and began to preach it with great vigor. Around this time, the members of the Sri Sampradaya began to raise some arguments in the court of the king at Jaipur. They complained that as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas had no commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, they were not qualified to worship the deity, and therefore the worship should be turned over to the Sri Sampradaya. They also objected to the worship of Srimati Radharani, along with Sri Govinda Gopinath, as not being authorized anywhere in the Shastras. The king, Sadachari Raja, was initiated within the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Thus he quietly sent word to Vrindavan, informing the devotees there what had happened. But at the same time, the king was obliged to remove Radharani from the deity room, as well as suspend the Bengali Gaudiya Vaishnava Pujaris from participating in the deity worship. At that time, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was very aged, so it was not possible for him to make the journey to Jaipur. In his place, he sent his student, Sri Baladev, who was fully conversant with the Shastras and thus able to competently face the challenge. In a great assembly, he posed such forceful arguments to the followers of Ramanuja that they could not reply to them. He further explained to them the originator of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has accepted Srimad Bhagavata as the natural commentary of the Vedanta Sutra as composed by Srila Vyasadeva himself. This is proven in the Sat Sandhava. The scholars in the assembly, however, refused to accept anything other than a direct commentary on the sutra. Having no other recourse, Baladev promised to present them with one. Feeling very aggrieved, Sri Baladev came to Govindaji's mandir and, after offering his prostrated obeisances, informed Sri Govinda of everything that had happened. That night, the Lord appeared to him in a dream and instructed him to write a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. "I will dictate to you what to write, and therefore no one will be able to refuse or to accept it." Having seen such a wonderful dream, Baladev was totally enlivened and felt renewed strength flow into his heart. Thus he began to write, and within a few days completed the commentary, which was titled Sri Govinda Bhasya Vidyarupam. May he who so mercifully and munificently was kind towards me and bestowed his favor by ordering me in a dream to write down his own commentary, which he could compose and which attained such renown amongst the learned circles that they bestowed upon me the title Vidyabhushan, may that dear friend of Srimati Radharani, who holds him dearer than her life, be glorified. May that Sri Govinda be glorified. Bringing the commentary with him, Sri Baladev again came to the assembly of the Ramanandi scholars. After reading the commentary, they were simply speechless. Thus the victory of the Gaudiya Sampradaya was announced far and wide, and the king, as well as the other devotees, began to float in the ocean of bliss. The scholars then bestowed upon Sri Baladev the title Vidyabhushan. This assembly took place in the year 1628 Sakabda at Gotra, near the present day city of Jaipur. Baladev Vidyabhushan installed the deity of Vidya Gopal there at Gotra Mandira, but the whereabouts of this deity are at present not known. From this day, the Maharaj of Jaipur announced that Sri Govinda's aarti would be first performed, and then the other temples would perform their aartis. After accepting defeat, the Ramanandi scholars expressed their desire to accept initiation from Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. However, he declined their request by stating that amongst the four authorized sampradayas, the Sri Sampradaya was highly respectable and the foremost adherent of Dasya Bhakti, devotion in servitorship. If there was any cause of loss of respect to the sampradaya, this might be considered an offense. Returning from Jaipur to Vrindavan, Sri Baladev presented the certificate of victory to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and narrated all of the events that had transpired. All of the devotees were in great ecstasy to receive this news, and Chakravarti Pad bestowed his full blessings on Sri Baladev. At this time, Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan began to write a commentary on Srila Jiva Goswami's Satsandaba. Sri Jaya and Sri Vijaya Govinda, residing at Gokulananda Mandir in Vrindavan, were worshipped by Baladev Vidyabhushan personally. According to the opinion of some devotees, the deities of Shamananda Prabhu, Sri Sri Radha Shamananda, were installed by Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan. After Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur finished his pastimes in this world, Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan became the next Acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. At the end of Vedanta Shyamantaka, Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan acknowledges his spiritual master thusly: I have been sent here to Vrindavan by one Brahmana Guru, Sri Radha Damodar Dev, to present a composition named Vedanta Shyamantaka, composed by his mercy for the pleasure of Srimati Radharani. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan became known later as Sri Govindadas. He had two well-known disciples, Sri Vidyadas and Sri Nandan Mishra. He is the compiler of the following books. There's a very long list of books that Baladev Vidyabhushan has compiled, including Govinda Bhasha, Shikshma, Siddhanta Ratna, Stava Mala Tika. So it's very auspicious to remember such great personalities, and we can only beg for his mercy on this, his disappearance day. And Srila Baladev Vijayabhushan Ki Jai. So now I'm going to cover the some of the glories of the lifetime of Srimati Gangamata Goswamini. And her pastimes are actually very, very wonderful. There are different ways in which this can be narrated. So I'll go for this one. Sri Yuta Naresh Narayan was the king of Puntia, which was located in the district of Rajashi, part of the present country of Bangladesh. His only daughter was named Sachi, and she was very devoted to Krishna from her early childhood. Yeah, I think I'm going to... Sorry, I'm just going to read from here instead. Her father was an important zamindar or raja whose name was Naresh Narayan. From her early childhood, Sachi Devi was indifferent to family life and devoted to Krishna. Her parents saw this and wanted to see her married as soon as possible. But Sachi told them that she refused to accept any mortal man as her husband. When she announced her determination to remain unmarried in this way, her parents were troubled but could do nothing to change her mind. When her mother died, Sachi Devi left home and set out on a pilgrimage which led her first to Jagannath Puri and then to Vrindavan. Actually, there's another account where it explains that when her parents died, she was given the kingdom, and she allocated the administration of the kingdom to someone else and then went to Puri and Vrindavan. So upon her arrival in Vrindavan Dham, she met Haridas Pandit Goswami and felt as though making contact with him had made her entire pilgrimage worthwhile. She became anxious to take initiation from him, but he hesitated at first because of her wealthy family background her father as being a king and her mother was a queen. Later, however, when he saw her asceticism and her unswerving determination to engage in pure devotional service, he gave her initiation into the 18-syllabled mantra. This event took place in the Govindiji temple on the Chaitra Shukla Ekadasi. After having received these blessings from her guru, she began to engage in intense bhajan, subsisting through madhukari, that is, by begging from door to door for morsels of bread. After a year of this intense devotional activity, she was told by her spiritual master to live in Radhakund with her spiritually advanced aunt and god sister, Lakshmi Priya, who regularly chanted 3 lakhs of names every day. Has anyone here ever chanted 3 lakhs in one day? Not? Yes. Jai, very good. Was you have one devotee? Chanted three laps. How long did it take you? 24.5 hours. That means you must have been a little bit inattentive. Because it's 3 lakhs is 176 rounds, is it? Huh? 192. So it's 192. So if you, this is my take on it, my realization of it, that if I'm chanting any, if you average about 6.5 minutes per round, you can still have about 6 hours to spare in 24 hours for eating and for sleeping. So it depends on how fast you chant and how clearly you chant or how slowly you chant. If it's too fast, then you're schnickering and schnickeram. You're not Aishnikram. You're not pronouncing Krishna's name properly. Every name must be pronounced clearly. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Every syllable must be there. At the same time, if one is going too slow, that means your mind is wandering. So I'm not correcting you, I'm just adding. At least you do. So anyway, this Ganga Mata had association with Lakshmi Priya, who regularly chanted 3 lakhs of names every day. So when are we going to have some Matajis chanting 3 lakhs every day? At least for one day. Try it. As a part of their regular spiritual practice, the two of them daily circumambulated Govardhan. After several years of such practice at Radhakund, when Sachi had become very advanced in her devotional life, her guru sent her to Purushottam, etc., to recover the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, which had fallen into disrepair. Taking the command of her spiritual master as her life and soul, Sachi Devi came to Jagannath Puri and took the Kshetra Sannyas vow. So the Kshetra Sannyas vow is, you take a vow never to leave the holy dham. You cannot leave. Has anyone ever taken that vow? Just want to know if this, what kind of association we've got here. And Janani Vas has probably taken it by default. He's hardly ever left. So anyway, so she observed that vow in Jagannath Puri. That means she can never leave the dham for any reason. At that time, all that remained of Sarvabhauma's house was a single rundown building which housed his Damodar Shalagram Shila. Even while she had lived at home in Pundya, Sachi Devi had studied the scriptures. In Vrindavan, furthermore, she had thoroughly studied the Bhagavat Purana, or Srimad Bhagavatam. In order to salvage Sarvabhauma's residence, she set out to preach. Her explanations of the Bhagavat and her transcendental qualities made such an impression on the public that her discourses were soon attracted large audiences. It did not take long before her fame had spread so widely that the king of Orisha himself, Mukunda Dev, came to listen to her Srimad Bhagavatam lectures. He too became a devoted follower of hers after being impressed by her learning and her devotional qualities. According to the Utkalakand, there was a king Shweta in the Treta Yuga who was a devotee of Jagannath. He made arrangements for Jagannath's boga just as Indradumna had done. One morning he came to the temple and saw the offerings which were made by the one morning he came to the temple and saw the offerings that were made by the gods or the demigods. Thousands and thousands of wonderful gifts which were beyond the power of any mortal being to present to the Lord. Shweta became disturbed at the insignificance of his own offerings and stood at the temple door, his head hung in shame. As he was meditating on his own insignificance, he had a vision in which he saw Lakshmi Devi herself taking his food offerings and feeding them to both sets of Jagannath deities. In brackets, besides the main deities, there is a second set known as the Vijaya Vigraha, who were eating them with great enthusiasm. The king immediately thought himself consummated by this vision, and he continued to serve Jagannath with unflagging enthusiasm. Jagannath eventually granted him the boon of being liberated in a spot which faces Matsya Madhava, halfway between Akshayabhata and the ocean, which was subsequently named Sveta Madhava in his honor. The tank excavated here was also named Sveta Ganga. On the banks of this tank, deities of Sveta Madhava, Matsya Madhava, and the nine planets are worshipped. One night, the king of Orisha, Mukunda Dev, had a dream in which Jagannath appeared to him and told him to give Sachi Devi a tract of land which bordered this Sveta Ganga. The next morning, the king joyfully came to see Sachi Devi and told her about the dream. Though she had no interest in increasing her worldly possessions, Sachi Devi decided to accept the king's gift for the sake of her guru-given mission to improve the condition of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. Prior to that, she had had to beg for the wherewithal to serve the deities. Wherever there is true devotion to the Lord, the trouble which one has to take to serve him is not seen as trouble, but rather as an opportunity and a source of joy. Not long afterward, a miraculous occurrence took place. One Krishna Triodasi, an opportune moment came for the Mahavaruni Ganges bath. Many people who seek to accumulate pious credits make the trip to the Ganges for this most auspicious occasion. Indeed, many of Sachi Devi's friends asked her to accompany them, but she could not abandon her Kshetra Sannyas vow to leave Jagannath Puri, nor her service to the deities. So she was obliged to plead that it was impossible for her to go and take bath in the Ganga at that most auspicious occasion of the Mahavaruni. Even though she did not really want to go, Jagannath Dev himself made arrangements for her to bathe in the Ganges. That night, he appeared to her in a dream and told her to take bath in the Sveta Ganga in the middle of the night. Sachi Devi followed his instructions, but as soon as she entered the water, she had a vision of Ganga Devi herself. She was carried away in a strong river current which came from nowhere and suddenly found herself inside the Jagannath temple. But she continued to see herself bathing in the midst of her friends from Puri. She not only saw the Ganges and all those who were immersed in its waters, but she could hear the joyful noise of the bathing crowds. As she was not the only one, the temple gatekeepers awakened on hearing the hubbub and called Lord Jagannath's pujaris. They in turn gave a report to the king himself, who ordered them to open the temple doors. When they finally flung the doors open, they saw no one but Sachi Devi standing there alone. Jagannath's pujaris were confused and at first did not know what to do. They assumed that Sachi Devi had broken into the temple with the intention of robbing the deity's valuables and that they had caught her red-handed. But by their suspicions, they committed an offense to a great devotee. As a result, they were attacked by various diseases and distresses, so much so that the service to Jagannath was affected. Jagannath Dev finally appeared to the king again and told him what had really happened. Being influenced by Satyadevi's pure devotional attitude, Jagannath himself had made the Ganges flow from his feet to bathe Satyadevi directly in the currents of his Charanamrita. The king and the other servants of the Lord could only be freed from their offenses if they apologized to Satyadevi and took initiation from her. King Mukundadev went to Satyadevi with his entourage, the temple guards and servants. They paid her prostrated obeisances, and they all paid their prostrated obeisances and begged for her forgiveness. Though the king and all the Bhajaris, etc., asked her for initiation, she only gave the mantra to the king in obedience to Jagannath's order. The king wanted to give a large amount of land as Guru Dakshin, but Satyadevi refused it. When the king continued to beg for an opportunity to render service, she finally said that every midday he could send two containers of Mahaprasad, rice and one of vegetables, a cloth and 160 paisa for the service of the Vaishnavas. From that day onward, Sati was known as Ganga Mata, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house as Ganga Mata Mat. And to this day, after the midday offering at the Jagannath temple, these same items are sent to the Ganga Mata Mat. Another of those who were blessed by initiation from Ganga Mata, Goswamini, was a certain Smata Brahman named Mahirata Sharma from Dhananjayapur. So, Ganga Mata was estimated to be born on Shukla Dashami of Jyeshta in AD 1601 and entered the eternal pastimes in AD 1721. Wow, that means she lived for over 120 years. 1601 to 1721. So she lived for 120 years. Branches of her math are found in Jagannath Puri at the Haveli Math and Gopal Math, as well as the Gopal Math in Katak district's Tangi village. Devotees of Krishna may be born in any race, in any creed, or indeed in either sex. They are still to be considered the best of human beings and worshipable by all. There are many examples of women who attained the supreme achievement of pure devotional service to the Lord, such as the wives of the Vedic Brahmins, who due to the demands of bhakti ignored the orders of their less advanced husbands by service to Krishna. In the Kali Yuga also, as a result of the blessings of Haridas Thakur, a prostitute was transformed into a renowned Vaishnavi, and many great devotees went to seek audiences from her in order to receive her saintly association. So just in following up on the last point is the wonderful life and example of Ganga Mata, and how Srila Prabhupada's vision for the Krishna consciousness movement was perfectly in line with the previous acharyas, which is whether one is male or female, black, white, yellow, green, whatever one's background is, one can become a guru if they are conversant in the science of Krishna. So within the Srila Prabhupada, of course, within ISKCON, it is a discussion that has been going on for many, many years. Did Srila Prabhupada want his female disciples to become Diksha Gurus? This is relevant here because we see in the life of Ganga Mata how she set such a wonderful example that it shines in Vaishnava history. So, Srila Prabhupada, of course, within ISKCON today, this issue is being discussed, and it went to a vote, I think, over the last couple of years, and the vote was 50-50. So, I know that there is one honorable Vaishnava within the room here who is opposed, and there are many honorable Vaishnavas who are for. Everyone is entitled to their point of view. But my take on this is that I look at what Srila Prabhupada said and how the example that Srila Prabhupada set was that he said that I want all of my sons and daughters to inherit this title of Bhaktivedanta diploma. And whoever achieves in getting the Bhaktivedanta, passing the Bhaktivedanta diploma, which is the study of all of Srila Prabhupada's books, they can become specifically empowered to initiate disciples. So that's one instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave that comes to my mind. It's obviously that I am pro. Of the 50-50, I'm on the pro side, I'm not on the against side. So, but still, the issue has been discussed by, there are those who are very conservative, they don't want to rush in, they don't want to, you know, because it's bad enough if there are problems with male gurus. If there are problems with female gurus, then there's really, you know, those problems could even be many times more magnified. So it is perceived. But the opposite might be true as well. Then they might have a better track record than the men. But that's another thing. So the issue is being discussed by the, because we follow whatever the GBC body decides, we follow that. Right now it's 50-50, but it looks like it's going to get passed eventually. And so therefore, we may see in the future, and I hope so, some Ganga Matajis appearing within our ISKCON, because we need them. We have the task of preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. We need empowered male preachers. We need empowered female preachers. And purity is the force. If there is purity there, the force will be there. If there's no purity, there will be no force. The sahajiyas, they have no potency. So, so this is a very special day to remember the pastimes of Gangamata Goswamini Ji, Goswamini, just remembering her name and remembering her pastimes is purifying. And we saw what happened to the king and those in the temple that disrespected her, and they accused her of becoming of being in the Jagannath temple to steal Jagannath's ornaments. They immediately got a reaction. So therefore, Vaishnavas and Vaishnavas, male and female, should always be respected. So I think I'll end there. Are there any questions or any comments on those three topics that we have discussed today? Okay, so we'll see everyone. Oh, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Just thank you for the class. I wanted to ask, the topic we were talking about, chanting lakhs of rounds, and what Srila Prabhupada really wanted for his disciples, because it is a preaching movement. Is there a balance between the two?
So the question is that we're a preaching movement, and Srila Prabhupada, and on the other side there is chanting lakhs of rounds, and if you chant lakhs of rounds, then it's going to very much restrict one's preaching. So what did Srila Prabhupada's, what was Srila Prabhupada's desire in that respect? Well, my take on this, and I say it's my take, with my understanding, my realization, is there was one devotee, his name was Sharma Das, and he was in fact the temple president in Nairobi later. And he said, so he came to Mayapur, and he went over near the Goshala, and he set up a Bhajan Kutir, and he started chanting 64 rounds every day. And basically, Srila Prabhupada did not approve. When he heard about that, he was not happy with that. Because, you know, the point that you're alluding to is that he was neglecting his preaching. He preferred us to preach. However, my understanding of this, that we don't have to chant, you know, 64 rounds every day, or, you know, 1 lakh of rounds every day. But on some occasions we must. On some occasions, at least, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, ekbar naam rase, ekbar na, just once, ekbar naam rase, gay gora madhusara, gay gora madhusvare, that just one time experience the nectar of the chanting of the holy names. So, like Gita Nagari Prabhu was convincing us the other day to please go on Sankirtan, please go in Harinam, please taste the nectar of the holy name, because that's his service. So he's doing that every day. There are other devotees cannot do that every day because there are many other important services that have to be done. But of all the services that we do, chanting the holy names of Krishna is what gives rise to all of our other services. If there is no chanting, then there's no other service in this age. So my understanding is that, okay, we should not go and chant, you know, 3 lakhs every day, or even 64 rounds every day. But at certain times in one's life, I believe there's nothing wrong with doing that. That you just go and say, okay, look, I'm getting spiritually weak here. I need to charge up my batteries. Let me sit down for 1 month, 2 months, and charge up my batteries with the holy name. Let's not die out here. Let's take advantage of the holy name. And even Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, he did that one time when he was chairman of the GBC. He went to Vrindavan, and for the welfare of ISKCON, he sat down and he chanted 64 rounds every day. It was very nice. Nice example. He's not going to do it every day and neglect his preaching. So it's a very nice point that we should not neglect our preaching, but if someone takes on too much preaching and he's not sufficiently strong and has not been sufficiently strengthened by the holy name, then that preaching will not be able to handle it. And we've seen in the past how devotees have really gone into preaching to such an extent that they fall down while they're preaching. So, and preaching is very dangerous. You know, it's you know, there's all kinds of obstacles that come up when we're preaching. Anyway, so that's my understanding on that. That we should get a balance. So, anyone else? Yes, Rahul. Well, we've got a very. How old are you, Prabhu? 12. We've got a question here from a 12-year-old great devotee.
If by taking bath in a Ganga you will get benefit, what happened if someone would just, they don't know that you will get benefit by taking the bath in a Ganga, if he went inside a Ganga and take a bath, did he get the same benefit from taking a bath as from someone who knows that you'll get a benefit from taking a bath.
So is your question that there's two people taking a bath in the Ganga, one is doing it knowingly and the other one unknowingly, correct? And do they get the same benefit? Is that your question? Okay, so... in Mayapur, for example, it is stated that if somebody dies in Mayapur, even they knowingly or unknowingly, auspiciously or inauspiciously, devotee or non-devotee, because of the element of daya or mercy in the holy dharma of Mayapur, that person gets Krishna prem. So knowingly or unknowingly. So the Ganga, taking bath in the Ganga in Mayapur, the result is that one becomes purified of all sinful reaction. Now one person knows that his sinful reactions are becoming purified, that he's, because he hears and he goes down and he says, oh, I'm bathing, and then he feels, he experiences some kind of upliftment and purification. There's another person, might just come as though everybody else is going to the Ganga, I'll go to the Ganga as well. So they might just bathe because everybody else is bathing. So is there any less benefit? It is explained that when one is chanting the holy names of Krishna, that if one chants the name of Krishna with more the name of Krishna and the Ganges river, they certainly have effect. There's no doubt about it. But the more one is conscious of the benefits, the more one gets benefit. So they both get benefit, but the person who is more conscious of the benefit gets more benefit. So that's the understanding that I have based on. But in Mayapur, even if you're not conscious of the benefit, you get the benefit. I mean, it's just inconceivable mercy that someone who's totally fallen, if they die in Mayapur, they get Krishna prem. Krishna prem is so... To attain Krishna prem is like after millions and millions, zillions of births, one can get it. Yet it's already available here in Mayapur. So let's all take bath in the Ganges today at 4 p.m. See you there. Hare Krishna. Oh, okay.
So you told that if anybody is conversant with Krishna consciousness, philosophy of Krishna consciousness, he can become guru. Also in Chaitanya Charitamrita it is mentioned that Jai Krishna Tatta Datta Shri Guru Hai. Anybody who knows the philosophy of Krishna consciousness can become guru. But why it is not mentioned that he also must follow four regulative principles? Because only knowing Krishna philosophy, is it a sufficient criteria to become guru?
So, where does it... Okay, that's... You're quoting one reference as to the qualification for one becoming a guru. You have to look at all the other quotations which give the criteria for one becoming a guru. And the another one which specifically puts light on the point that you're addressing is that the very basic qualification for one to become a spiritual master is Shrutiyam and Brahmanishtam. So Shrutiyam means learned and conversant in the science of Krishna consciousness. One should be a say guru hoy, Krishna tattva, should be able to explain the science of Krishna consciousness. But then Shrutiyam, that's Shrutiyam. And then Brahmanishtam. So Brahmanishtam automatically includes that following the four regular principles. How could it not? You cannot have Brahmanishtam and be breaking the four regular principles. So your question is, where does it say that he has to follow the four regular principles? So it's in that verse, you know, Brahmanishtam.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you, Acharya Prabhu. Nice class. It came to my mind naturally that by laziness, a tendency to be lazy, that there are so many benefits, like you mentioned, to take bath during Gopurnima and Ganga and you achieve that. So I was thinking, well, I did that already. So I have to struggle so much, you know, to wake up every day morning and chant my rounds and try to cultivate my consciousness and do all this and that, and some endeavors, it's difficult. We already did that, so why we have to struggle so much extra? Mm-hmm. We anyway achieve the same thing at the end.
Mm-hmm. So that's a nice question, and I think there's very few devotees who don't experience the same phenomena. Therefore, it is very essential that devotees perform sadhana to the extent where you get taste, ruchi. In other words, you've done this, you've done that, you've done this, you've done that, but still you have no taste, right? You don't long to do it again, right? So you're thinking, how come I'm not rolling around on the ground in ecstasy with Krishna Prem right now? Why? You know, I've done everything that the Shastra says. I've done this, I've done that. What's happening? What did I do wrong? So the first thing such a person does wrong is you stop. You don't stop. First of all, you never stop. You just get into non-stop mode. Non-stop mode. There is no stopping. You render service to Krishna 24 hours a day. Daytime and nighttime, sleeping. I mean, this is the consciousness of a devotee, that they want to think of Krishna, dream of Krishna, eating things of Krishna constantly. There's no stoppage of the devotional service. Gong gong gong, maso muvadho. The devotional ecstasy of the devotee flows to the ocean, like the Ganga, like the Ganges water flows to the ocean. So the devotional ecstasy of the devotee flows towards the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that within Mayapur, that if one simply chants the name of Gaura Nitai, Krishna Prem comes looking for that person. Krishna Prem is chasing that person, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. The problem is you're running away. You run in the other direction. You're saying, go nitai, but at the same time you're running in the other direction. Stop. I mean, don't stop. Don't ever stop saying, go nitai. You see people say, go nitai, nitai goranga. Like His Holiness Jayabhataka Maharaj, he's always saying Gauranga, because this is the land of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See, we just keep saying the name of Krishna. So, but like you're saying, it's a real phenomenon that we all have to do it. Okay, you wake up one day and you've lost all of your inspiration. You don't feel like chanting. You don't feel like serving. You're under the grips of, what do they call it, Maya. So the only way is to conduct one's life in such a way as that you have to transcend the Maya, and it starts first thing in the morning. You have to rise early, chant 16 good rounds, attend Mangalati, and then half your battle is won. It's very, very important. I can just say from my own realization that if I don't follow that that basic, simple formula that Srila Prabhupada said, you know, rise early, take bath, chant 16 rounds, nice rounds, you know, not shnikaram, not, you know, your mind wandering all over the place. Good rap, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare. Just think that, don't be indifferent. And also worshipping Tulsi Devi. Worshipping Tulsi Devi every day is so auspicious. It's one of the five things that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended. Srimad Bhagavatam, it's on par with studying Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the holy names, living in the holy place, worshipping Tulsi Devi. And then when Tulsi Devi is being worshipped, we should not be indifferent. If Tulsi Devi is being worshipped there, we should not be doing something over here. To be indifferent is an offense. Just like if some people come to your house and they're in the lounge room and they start talking with someone outside the window and they're in your house, they're indifferent to you and they're talking to someone else, that's an offense. So Srila Prabhupada prescribed this. He said this is the way to, he said that if you follow this simple program, rising early, chanting 16 rounds, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, going on Harinam, preaching, stick to that process rigidly. As soon as it is not rigid, the Maya enters. It's as simple as that. Devotional service is seen by determination. When it is resolute determination. Devotional service is resolute. You can tell if someone's in devotional service or not if he's got determination. If he has no determination to chant, that means Maya has got in. Our determination to chant has got to be stronger than Maya's determination to force us not to chant. Is it not? It's as simple as that. So we just get and associate with those devotees who have that determination. And if you can't find anyone available, pick up Srila Prabhupada's books. Read Srila Prabhupada's books. He's the most enthusiastic. So Srila Prabhupada said that if you don't follow this basic program, rise early, chanting 16 rounds, attend Mangal Aarti, he says, all your other activities will fail. He not only said that once, he said it at that 20 times. I've got it all documented. If you want the references, write to me, I'll send them all to you. And if you read that, the next morning, you will bounce out of bed. Such is the power of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. So, anyway, that's my realization of if you're totally not enthusiastic, if you lose your enthusiasm for engaging in devotional service, you have to go back to square one and go back to the basics. And have your enthusiasm for doing the basics. Everything else springs from that.
I was not asking about losing enthusiasm. I was asking about if you already perform some specific activity which is mentioned in the scriptures, which we should not accept as an exaggeration, like taking bath during Gaur Purnima in Ganga, then you achieve the spiritual world. Then if I, by following all the sadhana and all my duties in devotional life will achieve also the spiritual world, why do I have to struggle so much if I already did that?
Well, there are different stages of perfection. There's the beginning of perfection and there's the end of perfection. Initiation means to begin. So you said that, you know, you have done certain auspicious activities, and why am I, you know, like bathing in the Ganga and so on, why am I not being carried off by the Vishnu Dutas to the spiritual world? Because there are many statements in Shastra that say that that give rise to that kind of instant liberation. So whether one gets instant liberation or not, like for example, you might go down to the Ganga and Krishna takes you away straight away, or he might say, I want you to live out the rest of your life. I think that's in the hands of Krishna as to when he gives you the result for your activities. It's in the hands of Krishna. Just like when King Bhagirath, he did austerities to get the mercy of Krishna. The gopis are always doing austerities to get the mercy of Krishna. So Ganga, she also performed austerities to get the mercy of Krishna. So when Krishna gives that mercy, that's up to him. I think we have to be patient, enthusiastic, confident, and patient. So, okay, perfect. Hare Bol Prabhuji. His question is, and I'll get you to confirm it, that what if somebody performs all kinds of sinful activities and then he bathes in the Ganga or kills himself in the Ganga? Bathes. He takes bath, right. So, then that's taking advantage of one of these offenses is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name. So that comes under the same category of taking advantage of the Ganga, committing sinful activities and taking advantage of the Ganga so that one can be purified. The risk in doing that is that Krishna may not tolerate it. Krishna may cause such a devotee to become so familiar that they will forget the Ganges even has that power. So, and also the effect of developing love of God will only come after many millions of lifetimes. But still, even if such a person dies in Mayapur, he gets Krishna Prem. But don't tell such a person that we said that. Otherwise he might take advantage. Is there any time? Well, today I'm not aware of the time, or the auspicious time, but referring to the other bathing on Gaur Purnima, yeah, that's at the time of when the moon is rising. Yeah, that's the auspicious time. And that's when you get the guarantee that even if you're outside of Mayapur, you go back to Goloka Vrindavan. That's just, you know, that's got to be.
I was always told you had to time it by the moon.
Yeah. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that when Lord Chaitanya appeared, there was an eclipse of the moon and Rahu. And at that time, everyone bathed in the Ganga. And everyone was going, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Okay, Ganga Mata Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.
Thank you. Kapal, ayun ba kayo?
Ang mga sige, mga naman na yung ask real to do.